Welcome back to the South Harbor Church Podcast. South Harbor is a part of the Harbor Churches, which exist to help people find their way back to God. This week, Pastor Jeremy helps us take a look at this critical experience Moses has asking to see God. As always, for more information about how you can become a part of the South Harbor Church community, stick around after the message. And now, let's head over to Pastor Jeremy.
Good morning, South Harbor. How's everybody doing? Good? All right. So before we jump into the sermon this morning, I want to start by just like naming kind of the elephant in the room, or maybe more accurately, the elephant that could not fit in this room because there are so many of you in this room. We've been paying attention over these last few weeks at our numbers. We made the decision on Memorial Day, like we do every summer, to go from two services down to one service. And there's a number of reasons we do that. Part of it is to try to give some of our volunteers some respite. A lot of you give a lot of yourselves to volunteer in a number of different roles. And so we try every summer to make sure that we give some a little bit of space. And we recognize that numbers have become a bit of an issue. And so we've done a couple things. Like, those of you that are used to sitting in the rocking chairs, we apologize you showed up and now you saw there's not rocking chairs. There's normal chairs. We added the front rows because what happens when you add the front rows is it then gives people permission to sit in the second row. Right? Because nobody wants to actually sit like up here. So if you're looking for seats, there are some in the front row. But we've tried to do some things to add seating, to make space, and we've recognized we might still need space. And so we've been having some conversations. How is it that we can try to meet some of those needs while also holding on to the value of giving volunteers a break, especially in the summer? And so this is where we would love your input. As we've been chatting, we have an idea that we want to throw past you that we would love for you to weigh in on, that we are exploring the idea of adding a potential 8:15 outdoor, more simple, family-friendly service. So it would be one of those you bring lawn chairs, we'll start at 8:15, it'll be a little more stripped back, a little more simple, family-friendly, outdoor on our lawn at 8:15. And then after the 8:15 outdoor service, we would then gather together in the room here at 10 o'clock. But here's the thing, we don't want to do that if you're not going to show up, right? Like, as much as we like each other as staff, like sitting on the lawn for an hour and a half before we start the indoor service is not what we'd love to do. So what we would like is I created a giant QR code. If you could even take out your phone right now, scan the QR code, it'll bring you to a poll. A questionnaire. There are two questions, and then you can add some comments. Oh, am I in people's way? Oh, okay, I'm going to come down here. But two questions. If we open an 8:15 simple, family-friendly outdoor service, would you be interested in coming, or would you prefer the 10 o'clock indoor? Everybody, man, going to get a complex. Everybody's holding their phones at me. Did everybody get it that wants to get it, or was I in anybody's way? Okay, so if you could just kind of, which service would you most likely attend? 8:15 outdoor, 10 o'clock in person. And then there is a little comment section if you have anything else that you would like to share with us. We'd love that. And then we will kind of be in touch based on what interest looks like and how things look about whether or not we move forward. It wouldn't be for the next couple weeks, but we will then let you know. Sound okay? Awesome. Okay, now we get to jump into the sermon. I'm really excited about this morning's passage. It's a text that on the one hand feels a little strange, and on the other hand, there's something in the passage we're going to look at today that when I first saw it, I remember the first time I saw it, like these, you know that moment when like light bulbs go off, and you're like, oh, this is big, like this changes things. I had one of those moments the first time I learned something that I think we'll see in this passage. And so if you're new with us, we've been in the book of Exodus for the last number of months. And so we've been walking along the book of Exodus. Moses has just had this moment with God on top of Mount Sinai. God gives Moses the Ten Commandments. He gives the law. Moses comes down. He finds the people they've kind of given up on him to an extent. They don't know where he went. So we looked at last week, they end up kind of worshiping, giving their hearts to this golden calf. Moses comes down, and then what we find after that is Moses has this kind of interaction, this kind of conversation with God. And again, it feels quirky. It feels weird. God's response isn't what I would want it to be if I was Moses. And I think God's response might be exactly what Moses needed, and I think exactly what we might need. I know it's exactly what I've needed. And so I want to jump in the story. Exodus 33, we will start reading right at verse 12. Moses said to the Lord, "You have been telling me, 'Lead these people,' but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. You have said, 'I know you by name, and you have found favor with me.' If you are pleased with me, teach me your ways so that I may know you and continue to find favor with you. Remember that this nation is your people." The Lord replied, "My presence will go with you, and I will give you rest." Then Moses said to him, "If your presence does not go with us, do not send us up from here. How will anyone know that you are pleased with me and with your people unless you go with us? What else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth?" And the Lord said to Moses, "I will do the very thing you have asked, because I am pleased with you and I know you by name." Then Moses said, "Now show me your glory." And the Lord said, "I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you, and I will proclaim my name, the Lord, in your presence. I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I have compassion." But he said, "You cannot see my face, for no one may see me and live." Then the Lord said, "There is a place near me where you may stand on a rock. When my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft in the rock and cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will remove my hand and you will see my back, but my face must not be seen." It's an interesting story, isn't it? We start, one of the things I appreciate about the story is the story starts with Moses' request. Right, Moses is looking at kind of what's in front of him. Moses has been tasked, he's been called to lead the people of Israel, to lead the Hebrew people. And what Moses recognizes is this is not an easy task. From the start, they've been grumbling, they've been arguing, they've been complaining, they've not wanted to go along. Then in the story we literally looked at last week, Moses goes up on the mountain to meet with God. They kind of write him off, they do away with him, and they right away turn and give themselves to this golden calf, proclaiming this is now the God of the Israelites. Moses is looking at what's in front of him going, "God, I don't know how to do it. God, what's in front of me feels so big, it feels so hard, I don't know how I can possibly do it on my own." And so Moses says, "God, if I'm gonna do that, I need to know you're gonna go with me. There's no way I can do it on my own. It's too big, it's too hard. I need to know you'll be there." One of the things I appreciate in the story is in so many ways, that's not just a question Moses asked, right? Like, that's a question, if I'm honest, in my life, I've had. Right, where have you ever found yourself in that spot where what's in front of you feels really big, it feels scary, it feels hard, you don't know how to step into it, and you find yourself asking God, "God, if I'm gonna do this, I need to know you're in it. God, if I'm gonna do this, I need to know you'll be with me." And maybe for some of us, it's something in a relationship, like things have been bad for a while, and if you're honest, maybe it's not just bad, maybe it's broken, and you know there's some things you need to do, and you just don't know how to do it, or how it's gonna go, or what's gonna happen, and you find yourself in this spot going, "God, I don't know that I can fix this on my own. God, if I'm gonna be able to step into this, I need to know you're in it. I need to know that you're gonna be able to do, because I can't do this." Maybe for you, it was a space where you feel like you're kind of at a spot where you need to make a different decision around career, around what to do for work. And what you find yourself is you're in this spot where you know what you've done, right? What you've done is comfortable. It's known. It might not be your favorite thing, but at least you know it. It's comfortable. And you feel like you're on this spot where maybe God is calling you to something different, something new, to step into that, but you don't know what it looks like. You don't know what that step could look like. You don't know what's going to be there. That you know, this just feels unknown and scary. And so you find yourself calling out to God, going, God, if I'm going to do this, I need to know you're in it. I need to know you'll be there. I need to know that you're going to go with me. It's what Moses asks, right? Moses in that space going, God, I know you're calling me to do this, but I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to take that step. I think of my story. One of the times I know I kind of was in this space is when I started having this inkling that God was calling me to jump into seminary. I was ready. I was working. I had a full-time job. My wife and I, we were starting a family. We had a one-year-old daughter. And I'd had this nudge, this feeling like God was calling me to step away from what was known, and to step into something new. And the whole time I found myself calling out to God, going, God, if I'm going to do that, like that's a big risk. I'm going to have to quit a job. We're going to have to sell a house. I'm going to have, God, if I'm going to do that, I need to know that like you're in it, that this is the thing that you're actually calling me to do. And for Moses wants to know, God, I want to know you're in it. But God's response to Moses, you notice God's response to Moses, if I'm honest, isn't what I would want if I was Moses, right? When I was having conversations about jumping into seminary, I wanted God to show up and make it clear. And what I got were a bunch of conversations with a bunch of people and a long time in prayer and discernment before taking that step. I wanted God to show up in a real clear way that was undeniable. Moses wants the same thing. But notice what God does for Moses. I'll put it back on the screen. God says, there's a place near me where you may stand on a rock. When my glory passes by, I'll put you in a cleft in the rock. I'll cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will remove my hand and you will see my back, but my face must not be seen. If I'm Moses, if you're Moses, you want more than that, don't you? God says, tell you what, I'll go past and then you can see my back. Which can we name, like, that's a weird, like, is this the first, like, drive-by mooning? Like, what is happening in this story, right? Like, you can't see my face, you can see my back, as if that's better. Like, how does that answer anything? And then if you actually jump into, like, the Hebrew understanding that's going on in the passage, it could be that God says, I'm going to go past, and you're going to be able to see, like, my back. But more likely, scholars who have kind of dug into this passage and the language almost argue it's more likely that God says, I'm going to pass by, and then I'll remove my hand, and you'll be able to see not like my back, but you'll be able to see where I just was. So I'll pass by, and then you'll be able to see the space where I just was. And if that's the right read, on first read, that feels more problematic, right? God says, tell you what, to let you know I'm going to be with you and I will lead you, to let you know I'm going to pass by and then I'll let you see the place where I just was. Initially, it feels weird, feels unhelpful. But if I'm honest, I think as we spend a little bit of time with that, I actually find that incredibly meaningful. Because if I'm honest, as I look at my life, I think that's the way I often see God. Now, let me explain. There are moments in my life. My guess is there are moments in your life where, like, you've had those moments where, like, God just feels real, right? Where you're aware that there's more than just you, that there's more going on, that you're a piece in a much larger story, and like, the presence of God just feels real, feels intimate, feels present. Maybe it's the first time you ever looked in, if you're a parent, the first time you looked into your child's eyes, right? And you realize there is a life that you are holding in your hands, and there is no way that you just create, there has to be more. And you have this moment where, like, you're holding your child in a hospital room, and at the same time, you're aware that there's so much more going on. Maybe for you, it's one of those moments. I know a lot of people kind of connect with God in spaces in nature. So like you do a hike and you're on top of a mountain and you're looking out at just this expanse in front of you. And you realize that this world is just way too beautiful. It's so much bigger. Or you're standing on the shore of like an ocean. I often have this moment where I'm standing on the shore of an ocean looking out at this giant expanse. We don't even know what's down there. And I have this moment where I realize just how small I am and how big the universe is and the God that's created all of it. For me, my family, I kind of had one of those moments last summer. That's, you can barely see us. That's like the five of us on a little ledge in Sedona. We had the opportunity, kind of saved up for a couple years, went down to Sedona, and had this moment with my family where we're out in creation, we're hiking, I'm spending time with my wife and my kids. And for me, it was, on the one hand, it was a hike and it was vacation, but on the other hand, there were those moments where I just found myself so incredibly grateful to be in such a beautiful place with people that I love. And like, I had this moment when we were packing up to go home and I wanted to like tell my family like how much this week has meant to me. And I had one of those moments where like I couldn't talk because I know if I said anything, I would just weep. Anybody ever been there? Like it happens infrequent for me, but I was in this spot where I couldn't even. I was just wrapped up in just all of the bigness and the greatness and all of the, and it just felt like God was there. Have you been in spaces like that? Like where it's just, you just feel like God's presence is there. I have some of those moments, but I think more often, most often, the way I'm able to see God is less those moments where it's just opened up to me in the moments and I'm aware that God's there. But I think more often, it's like what God does for Moses, where I'm able to look back and see the places where God just was. Where with a little bit of time, a little bit of space, I'm able to look back on some events in my life. And in looking back, often I see God's presence more, I think, when I look back on some things that have happened, maybe even places in my life where I didn't know exactly where God was in the moment, but given a little bit of time, a little bit of space, able to look back and realize in those moments where God was. I think the Hebrew people understand this. I think the Hebrew people have a concept of how we're able to see God at work in the world, in our lives, that I think is really helpful. And I want to teach this next piece to you. It's about how we understand we move through time. Okay, can we go there? How we understand we go through time. So I want to put a slide up. We have past and we have future. This is the way we think about time, right? Past is what happened, future's in front of us. Let me explain the way I often understand the way I go through time is I feel like I'm oriented like this, right? The past is behind me, the future's in front of me. You think of time similarly, right? And so what happens is behind us, we have all of the things that we know, all the things that happened, our past. And then what's in front of us is the future, is the unknown. And what happens is we often, I think, find ourselves in spots when, like Moses, when what we're going to step into is unknown, it feels unclear, it feels really, really difficult, that what happens is we struggle to step forward into it because we don't know what's going to happen and what's going to be there. Sometimes I think we can actually become paralyzed in this space because we don't know what exactly the next step is supposed to be, and so we don't take it because we just don't know exactly what to do. And so we find ourselves in this space. Now, the Hebrew people kind of have a different way of seeing time. And in order to show you that, we need to spend a little bit of time looking at the Hebrew language. Be super excited, right? I promise you it'll pay off in the end. So Hebrew language, Hebrew words all are kind of based upon roots. So there's a root, a small version of a word that will then get used by other words, but the root is what holds the kind of core meaning of the word. Let me give you an English example. So the word form, if we go back to that last one, the word form essentially means shape, right? Something that has form has shape. Now, there are different words that we use that contain the word form, right? Anybody think of some words that use the word form? Transform, right? What is transform is to essentially change shape, right? Can you conform? conforming is essentially being shaped by some sort of outside stimuli. You can inform, which is essentially trying to shape your understanding of something. You can deform, which is kind of coming out of shape. But do you see how like all of the words that use the word form are kind of related to one another? Do you see that? How the word form shapes the definition. We good so far? Okay. Now for the Hebrew. I want to teach you a few Hebrew words, and I'm going to make you say them because I think it'll be helpful. So the first word, machar, the CH, like you got to make the weird, like you're going to kind of spit on the person in front of you kind of noise. So go ahead and say machar. Oh, well done. Machar means tomorrow. So remember, your past is behind you, right? Your future's in front of you. Tomorrow. So machar is the word for tomorrow. Machar comes from the root achar. Go ahead and say it. Do you feel how it's connected, right? Machar comes from achar. The word achar means behind. But our thinking, like, the past is behind me, right? The future, tomorrow's... But in the Hebrew, the word for tomorrow is connected to the word behind. Now, just to prove my point, I got two more words for you. Next one, the word tamol. Go ahead and say tamol. Tamol means yesterday. Any guesses before we put the next slide up? If machar comes from achar, tamol comes from? Next slide. Mol. Any guesses what that one means? Next slide. In front of. Yesterday is in front. Tomorrow is connected to behind. Okay, if we put the slide back up. So the way I think about time, the way I often think about time is past is behind me, right? Yesterday is behind. Tomorrow, the future is in front. But in the Hebrew, it's the opposite. So in the Hebrew, the word for yesterday, for past, is in front of, and the word for tomorrow is connected to the word behind. Why is that helpful? Well, when you turn around, what is it you're more focused on? All of the places God has been along the way. Right? When I'm facing the future in front of me, and this feels scary and unknown and hard and difficult, the idea of taking a step forward into that can almost feel paralyzing. But if I turn around, what I'm able to do is I'm able to look back on my story, and even bigger than my story, I'm able to look back on the larger story and see all of the ways God has been with me in the past, all of the ways God has been faithful, even in moments that I didn't see him in the moment. Does that make sense? Take my decision. Do I jump into seminary? At the time, I'm asking, God, I really want you to show up and like just be really clear and tell me that this is the right thing. And what I got were a bunch of conversations, a lot of time in prayer, some discernment, and eventually taking a step. At the time, I would have said, God, I wish you would like write it on a wall or send something in the mail. But from this point looking back, what I'm able to see is God was in every one of those conversations. That time in prayer and discernment and conversations, God was in all of that, even if I was less aware of it then. So instead of the future being this giant expanse in front, I turn around, I'm able to see all of the ways God has been there in the past, all of the ways God has been faithful, and then what it allows me to do. If I'm facing this way, right, the future is this giant expanse, and too often I think beyond just the next step, and I wonder how it's all going to play out and where it's going to go. But if I turn around and I focus on the way God has been faithful in the past, what it allows me to do is it allows me to just take that one next step, right? And I can take that step knowing, trusting, putting my faith in the fact that the God who was faithful every step before will be there in that one too, right? And so I can take just that next step, that whatever that next right step is, trusting that God will be there too. And then when I take that next step, focusing on all the things God has done, I can take that next, whatever that next right step is, trusting that God will be there too. Does this make sense? Can I show you, there's a Psalm 77. I think we actually see the psalmist play this out in real time. I want to show you. Psalm 77. So the psalmist is in a spot where the future feels really difficult. I'll let the psalmist explain. I cried out to God for help. I cried out to God to hear me. When I was in distress, I sought the Lord. At night, I stretched out untiring hands, and I would not be comforted. I remembered you, God, and I groaned. I meditated, and my spirit grew faint. You kept my eyes from closing. I was too troubled to speak. I thought about the former days, the years of long ago. I remember my songs in the night. My heart meditated, and my spirit asked, will you, Lord, reject forever? Will he never show his favor again? Has his unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has he in anger withheld his compassion? The psalmist is going through it, right? You can feel that in his words. It feels as though the psalmist is looking at what's in front of him and going, God, I don't even know where you are. God, why are you? It feels like you're hiding from me. God, how long will you hide? God, where are you? And then the psalm turns. It's in that next verse. Let's finish the psalm. It says, then I thought, to this I will appeal. The years when the Most High stretched out his right hand. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your miracles of long ago. I will consider all your works and meditate on all your mighty deeds. Your ways, God, are holy. What God is as great as our God? You are the God who performs miracles. You display your power among the peoples. With your mighty arm, you redeemed your people, the descendants of Jacob and Joseph. The waters saw you, God. The waters saw you and writhed. The very depths were convulsed. The clouds poured down water. The heavens resounded with thunder. Your arrows flashed back and forth. Your thunder was heard in the whirlwind. Your lightning lit up the world. The earth trembled and quaked. Your path led through the sea. Your way through the mighty waters. Though your footprints were not seen, you led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. And then he stops. There is no conclusion. There is no tidy bow at the end of the psalm. But it feels like the psalmist didn't need it. Because it feels like the author found his answer. That when he was looking at all of the whatever was in front of him, it all felt so incredibly difficult. Where are you? And the psalmist turns when he says, so instead of asking that question, I'm going to turn around and I'm going to focus, God, on all of the ways you've been there along the way, all of the ways you've been present, all of the ways that you've been faithful. And this, it almost feels like the psalmist then goes, that's it. That's the answer. How can I walk forward into whatever's in front of me? It's by turning around and taking that step, not forward, but backwards, focusing again on where God has been along the way. So for us, what does it look like to live a life? What does it look like to trust God? What does it look like to take the step into something that might be really difficult? That you might be here in a spot where whatever's in front of you just feels way too big. It feels way too hard. It feels, you know what was. You don't know what might be. Maybe the invitation is simply to turn around. Maybe the invitation is simply to look back on your life, on the life of the scriptures, the larger story, just to focus on all of the ways you've been able to see God's presence in your story, in your life. And maybe that turning around allows us to focus not on what might be, but what has been, and then to focus again on just whatever that next right step is, taking that backwards into the future, trusting that God will be there too, because God is good and God will always be faithful. Now, would you pray with me? God, we pray just that, that those of us who are in a space right now where something in front of us just feels challenging and difficult or maybe even impossible, that God, you would give us the eyes, give us the feet to turn around, to change our perspectives, to focus instead of on what could be, but to focus on what is and what has been and the way you have been a part of our stories in ways, in places that we've been aware of you and in places that in the moment we could not see you, but given a little bit of time and space, look back and see your presence in those spaces as well. And God, may we continue to take our steps backwards into the future, trusting that you will always be there. We pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen.
For more information about how you can become a part of the South Harbor Church community, find us on the web at www.southharbor.org or find us on Facebook and Instagram at South Harbor Church. And on Sunday mornings, you can find our service streamed live on Facebook and YouTube at 10 a.m. And so from all of us here at South Harbor and the Harbor Churches, we want to wish you once again a great week.